Hey guys, before we get into this week's episode, I just want to say a big thank you for your patience. We've been on an unplanned hiatus as I've added a couple of visual elements to this podcast. You may have noticed on my Instagram, and you may have also noticed that I am also uploading full-length episodes in video format to YouTube. So that's taken a minute, taken a bit longer than I planned. But yeah, just want to say thank you so much for your patience and we're back. I hope you really, really enjoy this episode and more to come as always. Let's get into it. Welcome to Take What You Need. Think of this as a weekly catch-up between me and you where we talk about everything. From the mindset shifts that make us better versions of ourselves, to discussing how the media and marketing play an even bigger role in the story of our lives than we might think. Each week, I delve into the questions that you, the listeners, have asked and share my take on the topics that matter the most to you. Let's get started. If someone doesn't want to pay me my rate on the first time around, then they don't respect me and it's not worth working with them. Why would I pay them if I can just do it myself? I don't want to give this person X percent of my income. Money isn't even important to me in the first place. These are all the myths that we tell ourselves, amongst other things, that actually hold us back from abundance way, way more than we realize. And in the last couple of years, I've been observing different people and the things that we say in passing that are almost subconscious that sometimes actually hold us back. And today we're going to unpack them. We're going to uncover it and make it feel a lot less stressful than it needs to feel, and hopefully create some space for growth and abundance and progress, which is what we're all kind of working towards. And I get it, money has layers and emotions. We all come from different backgrounds, but the one thing we can agree on is that money is super important. It's the currency, or one of the currencies, that we live on in life. So why don't we make the most of it? We all want to feel like we're a bit more attuned. And it's something that I hear people talk about all the time, especially online. All these phrases that I mentioned previously, like especially in freelance and creative context, it comes up a lot. And I have views, I'm not gonna lie. I have opinions. Some of them may be different from what you've heard before, but they are definitely the things that have worked for me and that I continue to be passionate about implementing in my life. And before I even continue, I think it goes without saying that I'm not a financial expert, I'm not an advisor, and there are many, many amazing technical sources of content around taxes, budgeting, and all those things out there that I will link in the show notes. This particular podcast episode is really about the mindset and the philosophies that help our brains and help our minds, because as we know, what consumes your mind consumes your life. So the stories and the narratives that we tell ourselves are super important. So for me, the biggest thing is that your experience in real life of money actually manifests in your brain first. So what I'm gonna do is just share some of my own personal principles, what's working for me, and I would love to hear how they work out for you too. So principle number one, my money doesn't come from a person, from an opportunity, from a job. It comes through those things. Now that sounds a bit like, what's the difference? There's a huge difference between whether someone is the originator, whether they are the source, and whether they are the channel. And for me, seeing people and understanding that people are the channel is the biggest game changer ever. And let me explain to you why this is a thing. So basically, when you know that your money doesn't come from a singular person or opportunity, they are not the originator, they are not the source, you cannot be controlled by them. People will try and hang it over your head, especially in the world that we live in. I've had situations in work where people have tried to make me do something because they felt like they are the source of my income. Little did they know that wasn't the perception, that wasn't the mindset I had, so therefore that wasn't the way I was gonna operate, I wasn't gonna play by their game. And I stepped away from certain meetings thinking, when I leave this space, they're gonna regret this conversation that they had, and they obviously did. And that's a story for another day. But when you have this mindset, you understand that this is a channel and it's an option through which the provision and abundance flows in my life, but it's not the only source. And therefore, should the opportunity disappear, should the source disappear, should this channel disappear, it's not the end of me and it's not the end of the world. This completely eliminates all anxiety that you may have around wanting to please a certain person or always make yourself available for a certain opportunity. And it allows you to rest. It allows you to think about, okay, so what is my source then? Where is my source? For me, that source is God. God is the ultimate provider. Deuteronomy 8 says it's God that gives us the ability to create wealth. And for me, that's where my mind goes. So I understand the importance of channels. the importance of people being the channel to that abundance. We are equally human. We are equal peers in that sense. And therefore, they are not the source. They are not my provider. And I can't really say more than that. They're just literally not the source, and that's how it goes. Now, that said, this doesn't mean that you should be like lazy, or you should underdeliver, or you shouldn't apply yourself. This is all really about the thirst. Like, if you're thirsting for an opportunity, you're more likely to sell yourself short. You're more likely to make compromises that you actually regret later. And who wants to live like that? I always say, I've said it in previous episodes, that I don't want to live my life less than, and if I have to compromise on essential values or essential experiences, there better either be a very, very good reason, but also there are some things that just can't be compromised. And when you detach the provision in your life from a singular person, a singular opportunity, a singular location, a singular job, a singular skill set, you're no longer a slave to them. You're no longer controlled by that. Your whole life is no longer dictated by that. And I think that level of freedom is liberating, it's empowering, and it's so needed. As I said earlier, I know that the Bible says in Deuteronomy 8 that it's God that gives us the ability to create wealth. So when I think about wanting to earn more, I don't immediately always go to, okay, well, I need to go and ask my boss, or this person I know looks like they have money, I'm gonna go and ask them. I will take a break, I'll take a breather, and I'll stop and I'll say, okay, God, what's the strategy here? Who should I be speaking to? What are the opportunities that I can uncover? What are the skill sets that I've got in my hand that are latent, that I haven't activated, that I haven't actualized? And that just creates, that allows you to sort of diversify your mindset. You're no longer depending on a human being or a human construct that can easily fail or change its mind, or the rules of engagement may change. It's a direct spiritual connection with God through which you identify the channels to unlock the next level of abundance or wealth that you're looking for. Abundance principle 2 is, it's not what it looks like. You can't make an investment, a business, a partnership, a money decision based on only what looks good. We do have our eyes, we do have our brain for a reason, but there's also a saying that says, there's a way that appears right to a human being, but actually leads to death. Have you ever taken a job, an opportunity, or even made a friendship or built a relationship based on something that looks so, so good on paper, only for a few moments down the line after you've made the commitment for it to be uncovered that this actually isn't what it was branded to be, right? And that's the point, that sometimes things that aren't good for us, or that things that are designed to trap us look amazing. And that's the point of them, right? Because they're meant to attract you even if they're not good for you. So that tells me that immediately what's on the surface is not necessarily bad, but we need to look again. And obviously, like, I'm Nigerian, it's almost like inherent for some of us to be suspicious. You've got to challenge yourself to look beyond what you think looks good, and also more importantly, what your circle or what the experts tell you looks good. Again, I'm not saying that you ignore all of those things, but they are factors, they are not the final truth. Let me kind of explain in detail why what looks good may not always be good, right? And I'm gonna go back again to the Bible and give you an example. So in Genesis 13, Lot and his family member Abraham are so, so rich. They're so rich, they have so many assets that they can't actually all fit on the land. So Abraham basically says to him, like, let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. But whatever, let's just move. Looks around, it says in the Bible that he looks and he saw the whole plain of Jordan towards Zoar, and he saw that it was really well watered, like the garden, like the land of Egypt, like the land of Egypt. And he went for that. Now, the difference between the two of them was that Abraham didn't mind. He didn't care which one he took, because he was operating under this idea that God is his provider. Again, think about principle 1. So wherever he went, as long as God went with him, he's good. Lot, on the other hand, was looking at what looks good to him, and also what looks like it was working for other people, like other lands that were mentioned. And what did that land that he chose turn out to be? In the long term, it turns out to be Sodom and Gomorrah, which is the city that eventually gets burned down. So you can see that what looks good on the surface there actually doesn't necessarily translate to real life. It doesn't necessarily translate to longevity. It doesn't necessarily translate to what was right for him. It may have worked for somebody else. But it's also about, what should I be doing and taking on at this specific point of time in my life? And this is a big thing for us here, because the scarcity mindset will tell you, or a following mindset will tell you, just, this is what's working for her, this is what's working for him, this is what's worked in the past, this looks good on paper, go for it. But wisdom will tell you, Follow the path that you're meant to be on, because that is the most fruitful for you, irrespective of external circumstances, irrespective of whatever else is happening in the world, and irrespective of whether it looks good to other people or not. Like, I've even made decisions in my life that it's only in years later that I found out that people around me really thought they were bad decisions or thought they didn't look good and would basically have been like, I'd rather die than do it. And I had always felt like this is my calling. I'm happy to make tough decisions if I believe it's aligned with what I'm supposed to be doing in my life. And those have paid off. And it's only in hindsight that I've seen other people, you know, basically imply that they would have never have ever done that. And should I have heard that at the time? And should I have taken their path? Maybe I wouldn't be happy with the life that I'd be living. I wouldn't feel like things were in perfect alignment. I wouldn't feel like I was living the path that I was supposed to live, which I'm extremely happy and confident in. It doesn't mean that things are perfect in the life, in the path that I've chosen. It doesn't mean there aren't goals that I still have to reach and there are things that I'm still working towards, but I am extremely happy with every single choice I've made and I do not regret a single thing. So the question is like, okay, so if it's not based on what I see in my brain and my intellect and what the experts are telling me, what is it based on? Again, it's going back to that spiritual connection. In Jeremiah 33, God says, call to me and I'll answer you. I'll tell you great unsearchable things that you do not know. I live by that verse. I live by it. I felt like it's very personal to me and really, really applies to me. And that's your answer. That sometimes when you're making a decision, it's not really just about what you can see and what you can sense and what you can touch. It's also about the direction that is coming from your spiritual inner connection. Obviously, a huge part of my life decisions are based on my spirituality. To me, it's super practical, which is why I sometimes talk about culture and I talk about work and business, and then I'm talking about my spirituality. It's because they all connect, they all flow from that spirit. Remember, in one of our recent episodes, we talk about feminine versus masculine, spirit versus flesh. Everything starts in the spirit and then filters down. So if you're thinking about what to do next and where to go next, start to question and ask yourself, is this the right thing for me, God? Channel your spirituality, listen to your inner spirit, your voice, and trust me, you will get an answer. That is one thing. I don't guarantee many things, but I know that in life, when you seek, you will find. So be bold enough to seek, be bold enough to take a step back and not rush into something because it looks good, and you will have the direction that you need. I'm not saying it's the direction that you may like. I'm not saying it's the direction that other people will understand. Sometimes things really resonate with you and no one understands it. And some of us are looking for external kudos and external approval and people to tell us it's okay. When you're waiting on that, it's never going to happen because everybody carries their own fears, their own perspective, their own experience. You need to be able to make choices on your own based on what you've received in your spirit. And when you do that, it will always pay off. Principle number three, hoarding is the quickest way to staying financially stagnant. Now, it should go without saying that there's a difference between saving and between hoarding. And I'm talking about hoarding. Hoarding is about a scarcity mindset. It's about holding everything really tight because, like, you just feel like no one else is entitled to it, or you've worked really hard and you need to keep on to it, or, you know, if you don't hold on to it, it's going to disappear. A hoarding mentality sounds like, why should I pay this person when I can just do it myself? Like, why would I hire a designer when I can just do it in Canva? Or why would I give this person 10% or 20%? Why would I give it to a church? Why would I give a church 20%? Like, I've worked for it, it's my thing, and like, people just want to use me for what I'm bringing to the table. Honestly, the list goes on and on and on, and it's a mindset that really is the reason for some people's lack of financial growth. It doesn't mean that things are going really badly, but if you want to grow, you've got to kind of give. And while I agree that, especially if you're starting something out, you want to do as much as you can on your own to learn, to save money, and it's only when you're starting to get traction that you want to bring people alongside to help you. But it's also really important to remember that everything in life that you sow, you reap. So if you're not sowing anything into the ground, then you're not going to reap anything. If you're not investing in other people, other resources to support you on your journey is maybe not going to move as quickly as you want it to move. From a religious point of view, and I've said this in principle number one, is that the ability to create wealth actually comes from God. So therefore, in like spiritual context, giving 10% shouldn't feel like such a big ask. By hoarding, it implies that you're not going to earn more, but by giving, it implies that you trust that of whatever you've given, that 10%, you're more likely to earn even more back. And that's really, really important. Similarly, like, there's a difference between being an amateur who knows how to use Canva and being an experienced designer who can bring on references, years of experience, knowledge of all the tools, and unbound creativity. Those are two very different things. And if we want to be honored and respected for the things we bring to the table, we need to be able to honor and respect what other people bring to the table. And the designer example is just one. Like, I mean, that's for anyone who sells any products or services. Instead of challenging why you should invest in them and can't you just do it yourself? Maybe you can if you wanted to go to design school and design for years and years and years, but it's also not very good time management or resource management to always try and do everything yourself, because actually the time that you will get back by investing in somebody else's skills creates space for you to double down on the things that you're really good at and increases your earning potential, increases your space for abundance, increases even your peace. We're not just talking about money now. We're talking about increasing your time and your peace gives you a sense of abundance and luxury that isn't actually even financial. So there's so many layers to this. And actually, when you have a hoarding mindset, it creates stress that may not even be related to money, but maybe related to time and feeling alone and your ability to actually progress. I also hear this a lot in my line of work when it comes to commissions and things like that. And there's a saying in investments that goes, I'd rather have a percentage of something than 100% of nothing. Every good team, whether it's in startups, whether it's in business, whether it's in the entertainment industry, everyone has a team and multiple people play their roles and help you get to a goal. If you feel alone, if you feel unsupported, if you feel like people aren't really backing you, maybe ask yourself if you're backing them. Maybe ask yourself if you are seeking to bring people alongside you to help you get to where you need to be. Maybe also do your due diligence and see that the people that you admire who are at the top of their game in a company, in a sports team, in a as a public figure in entertainment, look into the fact that they also give to their teams as well. Everyone plays a role. Everyone has something to contribute. And being able to honor somebody else's contribution will help you get to your goals quicker than you can plan. As Proverbs 11:24 says, one person gives freely and they get even more. And the person who withholds, they get nothing. They get led to poverty. Principle number four, never get offended when someone tries to price you down, aka negotiate. That is one of the biggest myths that I've seen online. And it really, really annoys me actually, because this whole idea of pay me what I'm worth is true, it's valuable, it's real, and I understand and I support the concept, but that statement in and of itself is incomplete, and in my view, it's a little bit immature, because life at the end of the day is a negotiation. I say this at home all the time with my family. Everything that is done in partnership with people involves a little bit of give and take. When I was working in the corporate world, we had some of the biggest clients in the world, the biggest brands, biggest companies. And I would see in the pitching and tender process that sometimes there would be a discussion around rates because we had a job to do, a service to sell, we had money to make, and they wanted the service, the client, and they wanted to work with us, but they also had a budget to manage, and that's okay. The shared goal was collaboration. And it's important to be able to be flexible enough to meet in the middle and not take that personally and not take that as an affront on the value that you bring to the table, because sometimes it's really not. Where too many of us go wrong is that we don't do the research or have the confidence to ask in a way that creates space for negotiation. So when someone tells us, oh, can you do it for this instead? We immediately clam up and we feel like you don't respect me and you don't value what I'm doing. But prior to having that conversation, you should be prepared with three things. And I've said this before in talks, when I do talks in person, you need to be prepared with the lowest that you're willing to go. You need to understand what the market rate is for what you're offering. And you need to know what your highest dream scenario number is. And you go in with that and you push it as high as you can go. One of my friends, Abadesi, runs a whole company that is dedicated to helping people win in the workplace, especially if the odds are stacked against you. And in one of her recent negotiation workshops, she talks about how you need to push that number as high as you can, especially if in whatever context you're underrepresented, because it's likely that your, let's say your cishet white male counterpart is already asking for even more. But that's not a personal thing, that is a business thing. And being able to divorce your personal feelings from business is super, super important. And I get it, it's tough because sometimes you pull your heart, your soul, your life into your work. So it feels like people should honor that appropriately. But the truth is, everybody's trying to get stuff done. Everybody's trying to make sure that they do it in a financially effective way. And letting your feelings, your personal feelings, get in the way is only going to set you back. It's only going to hold you back. Now, obviously, there are like cheapskates too, right? Who want to get something from nothing. They're going to push you down. I've been there. I experienced that. I'm not talking about them. We can ignore them. They are wrong. They should be ignored. You shouldn't work with them. But if you are in the business of selling your art, your creativity, which we all are in some way, even if you're not quote unquote creative, be prepared to negotiate. Finally, and this could probably end up being a whole nother principle, maybe I'll go into it in depth, but don't let your gratitude, don't let being grateful allow you to settle for less than what you're worth. Any agreement or partnership is mutually beneficial. That's why someone's approached you, that's why you've approached them, that's why you're exploring it. Therefore, we shouldn't be so grateful to the point that we're indebted to them. Again, I mentioned this all the way at the beginning when I spoke about principle one, this idea that someone is the only source of your livelihood creates this deep, deep sense of indebtedness that creates space for control, and in the wrong hands also creates space for abuse. It also creates space for you to sell yourself short and compromise on things that maybe you would regret compromising on in 5 years' time, and that is never a position to be in. We're all valuable, we all have things to bring to the table, and therefore we should all be trying to create partnerships and conversations where everybody feels like they've taken something away and that they are still be able to do their work and contribute in a sense of integrity without feeling shortchanged. Even if it's a brand that you love and you're so grateful for, you should never ever have to sacrifice your values in exchange for an opportunity. That's just my line, that's my rule. And sometimes you can make concessions, you can balance things out. And I'll give you an example, like in my own life, I was approached in my company by a global brand to do some work. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. It was really early on. I think it was in less than our first year of operation. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is a huge company. Everyone knows it. I'm so excited. And they didn't have the budget that I wanted. But in, like I said, you kind of weigh up your pros and cons. You weigh up what you're willing to give. So I thought, okay, what they're offering is not a bad price. Like, they don't want to go higher than this. Fine, it's not great, but it's not terrible. And actually, not only is their contribution decent, but the brand recognition is crazy. And I could really benefit from that, and I'd love to work with them. So I was like, okay, great, fine. You know what? I'm willing to make that trade-off. That's not a trade-off in my core values. You know, I'm not being asked to do something that's against my beliefs. Like, this is just about numbers, and actually the brand recognition that I'll get will kind of pay for the shortfall that is being offered. So I thought, okay, yeah, this is great. And in the course of the discussion and the contracting and the negotiation, I started to notice other things about the way they were handling this particular project that showed me that they didn't really care about this project. They were doing it because they had to. And it gave me a sign, it gave me a picture of what I might expect when we were working together on an ongoing basis. And I thought, if this is kind of the behavior that I'm seeing in the run up to the deal being closed, do I want to be in this deal, especially when I'm already going to be operating at pretty much a loss? Those two things started to go from like amber flags to red flags in my brain. And I was like, okay, I think I need to rethink this. I know they're incredible, I know they're amazing, but something ain't right here, and I'm not sure that I want to go ahead with this. And I didn't, and I still hold the confidence that something bigger and better will come along when the time is right, when the money is right, when the opportunity is right, and when they are able to prioritize this project in a way that I think is going to give it the ability to be as successful as it could be. I was only able to have that kind of calm mindset because of principle number one, understanding that the opportunity for abundance doesn't come from one opportunity, from one person. It comes through different channels, and it comes from God. Knowing your source is everything. It sustains you when things are hard and you want to make more money. It sustains you when maybe someone's telling you, if you don't do this, you're not going to get this. Understanding your source is absolutely essential. And those are some of my principles. We've gone through about four, and I think we might have to do a part two of this because there's so much to discuss. I'm really excited to take you through it. Let me know if you have any questions. As always, Instagram, TikTok, comment, let me know. And we'll take it from there. We're going to come back to this. I think there's a lot more to unpack. Thank you for listening as always. And check the show notes for what to do next. You know, subscribe, social media, all that good stuff.